You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Benedict Jones. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, February 28th, 2019.
I mean, we've seen this happen in many other states across our country where funding was removed from Planned Parenthood and, you know, STIs go up significantly, unplanned pregnancies increase because they can't get in to see a provider in a timely manner, so they just don't seek health care.
The Trump administration last week issued a domestic gag rule in Title X funding that will withhold federal funds from clinics that provide abortion services or referrals. In today's feature report, we hear from Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky's Vice President of Patient Services, Lynn Bunch, about how the Title X rule changes will affect Planned Parenthood here in Indiana.
Also coming up in the next half hour, with President Trump announcing this morning that he's walked out on talks with North Korea, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks area residents what they think of the president's diplomacy with Pyongyang. That's coming up later in the program. But first, your daily headlines.
Gun control advocates will protest outside of the State House in Indianapolis this weekend. The Indianapolis-based organization We Live was founded by Westside resident Brandon Warren after his peer and friend was shot in 2017.
I lost a friend and a football teammate of mine by the name of Dejon Anderson on the west side of Indianapolis, and it motivated me to start this organization against youth violence. After I lost my friend, I lost him to gun violence. I wanted to allow myself and my peers to have a voice against all youth violence. So alongside about 30 other classmates, we founded the first group of We Live. I'm a graduate of Warren Central. And from there, we've continued our message and our mission.
Warren says We Live will be lobbying legislators this weekend after the passage of House Bill 8 in the Federal House of Representatives. That's the first gun regulation bill to clear the House in 25 years. Warren was behind last year's March for Our Lives organizing in Indianapolis. He says he's hoping to lean on the testimony of his peers to draw attention to gun violence in his community.
Last year, we hosted March for Our Lives after the Parkland shooting, and one thing that we're touching on this year that we want to touch on stronger than last year is our testimony. The people that I feel is sort of against our call for this, you know, it's rare that they've lost as many peers of mine. It's rare that they've, you know the tragedy of the Noblesville shooting. You know, we want to put them in our shoes. We want to show them why this is so important to us and how this can happen anywhere. We want to show them on, you know, if you care about the next generation, then this will be something essential that you need to pass. And ultimately, it's not us trying to take away anybody's guns. This is about us trying to keep the guns out of the wrong hands, because honestly, that's where our tragedies come at. And we're tired of waiting till something happens. You know, we're tired of shootings within urban communities. We're tired of mass shootings. And this can be the first step towards decreasing that. And tomorrow that will be our call, alluding to them our testimonial experiences and why this is so key and dramatic to us.
We Live and other advocates for increased background checks will be protesting outside of the State House in Indianapolis on Saturday at noon.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb said Wednesday he will try to build public support for a hate crimes bill. As WFHB correspondent Cade Young reports, yesterday's announcement comes after the governor criticized the Republican supermajority in the state legislature for gutting Senate Bill 12 last week.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb plans to draw on public appeal to pass a hate crimes bill.
Holcomb said in a news conference yesterday he's encouraging Indiana residents to contact their legislators and encourage them to pass a hate crimes bill. The announcement yesterday comes after Holcomb criticized the state's leading hate crimes legislation, Senate Bill 12, after Senate Republicans gutted protections in the bill last week. In a written statement last week, Holcomb wrote, quote, "The version of the bill approved today by the Senate does not get Indiana off the list of states without a bias hate crimes law. We have a long way to go, a lot of work to do, and fortunately the time yet to still do it. I will continue to fight for the right ultimate outcome for our state and citizens this year so we're not right back here in the same place next year." Unquote. Indiana is one of five states without a hate crimes bill. Senate Bill 12, which passed out of the state Senate last week, is the leading bill to address hate crimes legislation in Indiana. Last week, Republican senators adjourned from their closed-door caucus and authored an amendment to the bill, stripping it of protected classes such as race, gender, age, religion, and sexual orientation. Republicans hold a supermajority in the state legislature, occupying 40 of the 50 seats in the state Senate. Senate Bill 12 was authored by Lafayette Republican Ron Alting. Alting broke ranks and voted with 9 Democrats against advancing his own bill out of the Senate last week after the protections were stripped from the legislation. The bill is now in the state House of Representatives. Governor Holcomb's statement yesterday signals he may be willing to sign the hate crimes bill into law if it passes out of the House. Holcomb told a news conference yesterday the hate crimes law is long overdue, before citing the spray painting of Nazi graffiti last summer outside a Carmel synagogue. According to the Associated Press, the first-term Republican governor says he hopes passage of any hate crimes bill would improve Indiana's image and, in turn, increase economic growth. Holcomb told the AP, quote, "This is about now, but also about where we're going to be in 5, 10, 15 years," unquote. Senate Bill 12 is sponsored in the House by Terre Haute Republican Greg Steuerwald and co-sponsored by District 32 Republican Tony Cook. It was referred to the House last Friday. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Cade Young.
Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb admitted yesterday that he had used marijuana in college, despite currently opposing its legalization in Indiana. Holcomb, when answering questions about marijuana legalization, was asked by a reporter whether he had ever used it himself. Holcomb replied that he had done so in college, but did not provide further details. The governor stated that he is still opposed to the legalization of marijuana, saying that he wants Indiana to follow federal law. Under federal law, marijuana is classified as a Schedule I controlled substance, meaning that it has no currently accepted medical use and a high potential for abuse. Individual states have been allowed to craft their own laws for marijuana use. 33 states allow it for medical use and 10 states for recreational use, including neighboring Michigan. Governor Holcomb says that he believes that more research needs to be done before marijuana can be legalized in Indiana, and that he does not believe that that research exists yet.
Online pothole and road hazard reporting is now available on the Monroe County website. The service has been available for less than a week, but the county's public works director, Lisa Ridge, says the response has been enormous. Ridge spoke about the new online reporting form in yesterday's Monroe County Commissioners meeting.
We received, I think, probably about 75 in the last 24 hours. So it's being used.
Wow.
So we'll work out the kinks as we go. But yeah, it's great.
That's awesome. Great.
Yeah. Awesome. So glad.
The new online pothole reporting form is for Monroe County roads only. Ridge told county commissioners yesterday the online reports are emailed directly to the county's engineering department. Ridge also discussed the West Sample Road reconstruction project with commissioners.
We are currently buying right-of-way for the eastern segment of this project, which is I-69 to Old State Road 37 North. However, we've received funding to go ahead and begin the right-of-way acquisition for the west side, which is Bottom Road to I-69.
Ridge said West Sample Road will remain two-lane and will not deviate from its current path. The reconstruction will also address drainage issues. Ridge and Commissioner Julie Thomas discussed the project.
It's really not a big, huge expansion. It's really just...
Yeah, it's basically reconstructing, improving the road, improving the curves on the road, and especially the drainage. I don't recall having any relocations on the project. If we did, it was just one that would impact a home. But if I remember right from our public meetings about a year and a half ago, we had that public meeting early enough that we could make some adjustments to not have to relocate someone.
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you.
The commissioners approved a $300,000 contract with civil engineering firm Butler, Fairman, and Seufert for the project.
The Monroe County Community School Corporation is holding a Girls in Engineering, Math, and Science Day next month. Cyrilla Helm, MCC Foundation Director, says the school corporation has nearly met its goal of registering 200 girls for the March 23rd event. Helm spoke about Girls in Engineering, Math, and Science Day in Tuesday's MCCSC school board meeting.
I would also like to extend the opportunity for anyone in the community that is running a STEM-based company. If you would like to be a part of the Career Expo, which takes place early in the morning from 8 until 9 a.m., we still have room there.
Helm said the event will offer more activities this year than in the past. Registration for Girls in Engineering, Math, and Science Day will close on March 8th, or when the 200 slots have been filled.
So if you still would like to join the Career Expo or become an adult volunteer or register your child, you can go on to the foundation's website. All the links to the Google registrations are live, and I'm pretty sure that Andrew has them available on the MCCSC site as well.
Helm also said the school corporation will be awarding $15,000 in scholarships to help high school seniors attend college. The application deadline is March 29th. Scholarship descriptions and application links can be found online at mccsfoundation.org.
The Bloomington Board of Park Commissioners approved lowering admission fees at municipal pools this summer during their Tuesday meeting. Sports Services Director John Turnbull said single admission rates will be lowered and the current punch pass system will be eliminated.
Our current price structure is $6. That includes the slide and everything else. We are proposing to reduce that to an even $5. That would also include the slide and everything. And we are proposing to include a season pass.
Turnbull estimates the new fees will result in a 20% reduction in revenue from the city's Bryan Park pool. The park commissioners voiced their support for lowering the pool admission fees despite costs to the city. Here's Park Commissioner Kathleen Mills.
Like for some families, especially if there isn't a lot of money and things to do in the summer, movies have gotten really expensive, mm-hmm. but the pool can be hours of, reasonably priced entertainment.
Turnbull said a $50 season pass will replace the current punch pass and offer unlimited visits. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Benedict Jones.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograph and Ben Neoff. Slotograph Neoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or at slotographlegal.com. Slotograph Neoff, law for business, community, and life.
Last week, the Trump-Pence administration announced changes to Title X funding. Title X is a Nixon-era federal health care program that provides funding for family planning and reproductive health services. Those services, which include cancer screenings, STI checks, birth control, and pregnancy testing, primarily serve low-income families and the uninsured. Under the proposed changes to Rule 10 title funding, which have yet to be ratified, clinics and programs receiving federal funds will not be allowed to provide abortion services or refer clients to healthcare providers that perform abortion services. Title X grantees, which include state and local health departments, as well as Planned Parenthood clinics and healthcare providers in between, refer to the new Trump-Pence administration rule as a domestic gag rule, because physicians could lose their funding if they refer a client to a healthcare provider that performs abortions. Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky's Vice President of Patient Services, Lynn Bunch, talks about how Planned Parenthood of Indiana's 20,000 annual clients may be affected by the Title X changes in today's feature report.
Title X program funding in Indiana allows low-income families, women, men, and young adults to seek health care and access low cost health care for birth control, STI testing, cancer screenings, and other essential reproductive health care, that without the Title X funding, this patient population has trouble accessing affordable care of this type. So the Title X funding serves thousands of Hoosiers across Indiana so that they can get the type of care that they're needing that's hard to get otherwise without this type of funding. Title X funding ensures that, you know, about 23,000 or more patients in Indiana can receive STI testing, birth control, cancer screenings, and other reproductive health care, but none of these dollars go into abortion care. The domestic gag rule proposed by the Trump and Pence administration changes Title X funding to prevent medical providers from sharing information with their patients about the full range of options during pregnancy. The gag rule refuses to allow us to present abortion as an option to our patients who are looking for all options available to them for their pregnancy. And because of our commitment to ethical patient care, it threatens Planned Parenthood's ability to continue participating in the program under this gag rule. Planned Parenthood will not withhold medical information from our patients, especially critical information people need for life-saving care. So this is, you know, not great news for anyone who can't afford the rising costs of health care, because the gag rule will dismantle the nation's only family planning program meant to ensure that people with low income can still access birth control, STI testing, cancer screenings, and other essential reproductive health care. We will not be able to accept Title X dollars any longer under this gag rule. So it imposes cost prohibitive and unnecessary physical separation requirements on the health centers that also provide abortion as an option, an effort to stop Planned Parenthood from participating in Title X, forcing health centers to build separate entrances and exits, construct whole new health centers, or hire a whole second staff of providers and nurses that would make costs more expensive for our patients and would keep us from being able to necessarily provide this low-cost care for the thousands of patients that have difficulty finding access to care because of their socioeconomic level. And that support that we get from the Title X dollars that allow us to provide this care at a lower cost will be removed. We will never force our physicians and nurses to censor themselves. We would never ask our patients to come to a health center that provides them with incomplete and inaccurate medical information. So if the Title X gag rule is implemented, we know that fewer health centers would accept these funds. And as a result, its patients are going to suffer because patients will not have access to the care that they need. We as Planned Parenthood will fight back with every avenue that we have, because it's our promise to our patients that we will always be here for them. Patients who, if we can't continue to provide affordable health care and reproductive health care rights care to our patients, then, you know, they'll go to other FQHCs to try to seek the same care. Possibly, yes, but those facilities can't, they don't have the capacity to accept the, you know, 24,000 patients that were served in our Title X facilities in 2017. And the centers that are in FQHC qualified now. So those patients will either wait longer wait times to get in to see another FQHC provider that has Title X funding so that they can continue to seek affordable care for them, or they won't seek care at all. I mean, we've seen this happen in many other states across our country where funding was removed from Planned Parenthood and, you know, STIs go up significantly, unplanned pregnancies increase, because they can't get in to see a provider in a timely manner, so they just don't seek health care. This type of thing puts our women's health care at risk all across the country, but definitely in Indiana and Kentucky. And we're talking about breast and cervical cancer screenings, about STI and HIV tests, about preventative care, affordable birth control, and the Title X gag rule would dismantle that safety net program. And the impact is going to be putting all women in Indiana and Kentucky at risk. Title X is intended to serve those who otherwise would have trouble accessing health care. It's families with low income. It's people who live in rural areas. It's people who don't have health insurance. So when we take away that safety net for them, and like I said, Planned Parenthood will not accept gag rule funds, then those patients, those women, those men and young adults don't have that safety net to receive the high-quality reproductive health care services that they deserve. You know, in this country, we have a huge unmet need in general And what this Title X gag rule does is punish those who already face a disproportionate barrier when it comes to health care. This rule going forward, again, just means that patients' rights, because of the Title X gag rule, also have a gag, which it prohibits doctors and nurses from telling our patients full and accurate medical information. It compromises the ability for them to seek and achieve the care in an affordable manner from one of the largest providers of reproductive health care. It puts everybody, women, men, and young adults in our country, and again in Indiana and Kentucky, at risk. You know, we have charity care funds within our, you know, centers and our affiliates across the country, and we have, you know, we try to support all patients that can't afford health care, regardless of whether they're going to a Title X center or to a regular self-sustaining center that provides family planning. But those dollars don't always go as far as they need to serve low-income and underinsured or uninsured patients. So when you take away some funding that we get federally to make that more possible to provide that kind of care in our Title X centers, which is, allows us to have more dollars to provide family planning and reproductive health care, right, health care, and the services that we talked about, the cancer screenings, the preventative care, STIs, treatment, birth control, it dips into those dollars and it makes it impossible for us, not impossible, I mean, we'll continue to provide care, of course, but, you know, it just makes it more difficult.
Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky's Vice President of Patient Services, Lynn Bunch, speaking about the Trump-Pence administration's proposed rule changes to Title X family planning and reproductive health funding. Title X enables 4 million low-income women and families to receive access to birth control, breast and cervical cancer screenings, sexually transmitted infection testing and treatment, and other preventative care, according to the Department of Health and Human Services. Title X funding cannot go to abortion services due to the 1979 Hyde Amendment. For more information on the proposed rule changes, go to WFHB.org following this broadcast.
Support for WFHB comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
In the recent days, President Donald J. Trump traveled to Hanoi, Vietnam for a summit with North Korean Supreme Leader Kim Jong-un. The talks are centered around the disarmament of North Korea's nuclear weapons program. Voices in the Street went out to ask area listeners on their opinions regarding North Korea. So in the recent days, President Donald J. Trump went to Vietnam for a summit with North Korean Supreme Leader Kim Jong-un. How do you feel about North Korea?
I don't know. I feel like it's kind of North Korea who's like has a lot of like pushback and doesn't want us like, you know, knowing what they're doing. And yeah, I feel like it's pretty hard to just like get information about North Korea and what all they're doing over there. And I think that it would help if they kind of came out and like gave more information and kind of told us what they're trying to do and what they like, what kind of relations they want with the United States.
How do I feel? That's not really a topic I can speak on, because I don't know much about our relations with North Korea, other than I find it strange how just up until recently North Korea has started going out into the public more. That's all I can really say on it. I'm not really sure. Like, part of me is like, yes, and part of me, no, because that's seems a little paranoid to think, but that's just me as a person.
Maybe they're a threat. I think they're definitely a nation we need to watch and consider, and highly communicate with them, because they're developing and testing nuclear weapons. And Kim Jong-un, to say he's a sane guy, I think would be pretty questionable. Yeah, I think the relations with them are important, and definitely something we need to be on top of in these next years to come.
Well, I think it's the whole Korean Peninsula, because they're trying to denuclearize all of them. I think the South Korea thing is much more doable than North Korea.
Do you feel that North Korea is a threat to our society?
I'm not sure if I've got a good enough idea of what they're capable of to say.
Though I don't see how anything productive could possibly come from that.
Do you feel that North Korea is a threat to our society?
Physically, yes, I would assume so, with the nuclear capabilities that they have. As far as our society, I don't think so. I think we all know what's going on there.
Well, it's complicated. They are definitely seeking nuclear weapons, so that's a matter of concern. Talking is always good, so we should be talking. I worry greatly that the president does not listen to any of the expertise around him. And this flipping back and forth between nuclear threats and we have a deal with no evidence is very worrisome, I would say. So, yeah.
Do you feel that North Korea poses a threat to our society?
Do I think that they would use a nuclear weapon? I'm not sure. Are they seeking nuclear weapons? I'm certain of that. So, you know, in terms of, you know, ideological threat, no. In terms of the safety of the world, I think they pose a danger to the safety of the world. Now, how we deal with it is a different question entirely. Their government definitely represents a threat to their own people, if, you know, judging by reports we get about health, general health and well-being of North Korean people.
I don't really know much about the politics of the world, so... I mean, I wish I did, but it stresses me out a lot, so I tend to stay out of that stuff. So I don't really know a lot about it, but we learned from, like, the Cold War and stuff that, like, that's just kind of not good. And, like, killing a whole bunch of people all at once isn't a solution to anything, really.
Sure, it's faster, but, like, the aftermath, man.
Yeah.
I think they do pose a threat to our society, but I don't think the president really understands the threat, and I don't think he knows what to do.
How do you feel about their possession of nuclear arms?
It's dangerous because North Korea, like the United States, has a crazy person in charge.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Cade Young, Andrew McKeeran, and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by executive producer Wes Martin.
Voices in the Street was produced by Isaac Gonzalez. Our engineer today is Kevin Oliver. Our theme music is produced by Ben Lumstein, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. For WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, a WFHB news and public affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next, right here on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.